sit on. Yes. Complicated. I take refuge in the Buddha, one bright mind. I take refuge in the Dharma, the teachings from along the way. And I take refuge in the Sangha, the people who will support me. Well, thank you everyone for coming to today for this, our Zazen Kai, our day of practice, or for some of us, it's been 2 days of practice. So we got an extra whole day of practicing together and being part of this temple. It's very, I was kind of struck with how still the Zendo has been today and yesterday. It's great to practice here. Today I want to talk about two things. I'm going to talk a little bit about the four foundations of mindfulness, but the two things that I want to really speak to are this idea of no self and this idea that I've been presenting all along about feeling tones and why that's so important. So I had an experience this morning as I drove here. I left a little bit later than I'd hoped. And so I was like really goal-oriented to get here on time. And so at first I was driving, trying to make all the lights, you know, and there wasn't much traffic. So I was really making good time and I was really concentrated on that. And then all of a sudden when I got down by the river, the sky was just beautiful, pink and lovely and wonderful. It was the sun was coming up, and I said, oh, what a pleasant feeling, what a wonderful thing. I'd like to just sit here and watch this. Of course, I'm driving, and I can't, you know, and I don't have a choice. I've already made my commitment. But I was pulled towards this pleasant thing, and then my awareness was quite open, so I was just seeing what else is going on. And there's the freeway. You know, so I noticed the freeway and the paint is peeling off and these kind of industrial-looking signs that say things in green, kind of harsh, and I'm kind of going, that's not so pleasant to me. And I was just feeling these different feeling tones come up, arise, and then disappear. And if I got stuck in them, like if I just kept thinking about it or imagining it, because it's already passed, then I missed the next thing. And so the next thing was this beautiful fog, white fog along the river. And it was coming up, and you could see the Fremont Bridge peeking out from it. And it was just a wonderful sight that we see sometimes, but sometimes we're so busy involved in something else that we just don't notice what's happening in our lives. And it just kept going like that, and when I got up to closer to here, I was paying attention, all of a sudden we're in kind of dense fog. But it, you know, oh, I'm not sure if I like that. So every time I would kind of, is this pleasant or unpleasant? I was just practicing with it. But instead of like ignoring it, I paid more attention to it and said, oh, why don't I like this fog? Feels like dense and I winter and I want to take a sun vacation, and it's pretty fast your mind goes off on something else. But within the fog, it made the fall leaves look completely in a different way. It made a background for the bright yellow leaves to shine in a different way. So throughout that little trip, I was able to see how I identified things as pleasant and unpleasant, and how I'd want to kind of hang on to the pleasant and push away the unpleasant things. Fortunately, most of it went real fast, and so I was able to stay awake during this time, we'll say. So what I see is that we can just miss our lives completely by being involved in ourself, in this self-centered view. And we have to kind of take it all apart. So that's why we're exploring the self in this Ango period. And we're looking at this text from the Pali Canon called The Four Foundations of Mindfulness, Four Establishments of Mindfulness, or the Satipatthana Sutta. So I'm going to just read one translation of it, just a little bit, the beginning of it. So it starts out, "Thus I have heard." So when the words "thus I've heard" are spoken, that means that this is a teaching from the Buddha. "Thus I have heard, on one occasion, the Blessed One was living in the Kuru country, in a town of the Kurus named Kamasadama. There he addressed the monks thus." "Monks?" They replied, "Venerable Sir, the Blessed One said this, 'Monks, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha and discontent, for acquiring the true method for the realization of nibbana, namely the four satipatthanas.' What are the four? Here, monks, in regard to the body, a monk, or anyone who practices, abides contemplating the body, diligent, clearly knowing, and mindful, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world. In regard to feelings, he abides contemplating feelings, diligent, clearly knowing, and mindful, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world. In regard to the mind, he or she abides contemplating the mind, diligent, clearly knowing, and mindful, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world. In regard to dhammas, or phenomenon, or objects of mind, he abides contemplating dhammas, or phenomenon, diligent, clearly knowing, and mindful, free from desires and discontent in regard to the world." And then many of you have read parts of this, it goes on and on explaining a little bit more how to do that. So a few people have mentioned how this sutta is really repetitive. And that's the structure of all these suttas. Sutta is the Pali word. Because it was based on an oral tradition. In the audience, there was audience participation. So if I was giving a talk, you would be asking and I'd be answering. We don't quite have the same thing. But can you imagine not having writing, not having books, and that we had to transmit our communication all orally? How different that would be than what we have today. So we have to take into account that this has been handed down for 2,500 years, and it's from a different era, for sure. And 2,500 years ago, the zero wasn't even discovered. But these people, just like us, were really involved in looking at what is the makeup of a person. Why do I act this way? Why are we here? And why do we suffer so much? How can things be different? And this sutta became very popular in the Theravadin tradition, and it's chanted a lot, and it's chanted even when people are dying. A monk may come to the house and chant it for someone who's at the brink of death. So it has a lot of interesting qualities about how to disengage from our self, this self thing that we keep selfing. Now, the Satipatthana Sutta is doing two things. It's helping us look at impermanence besides the non-self. When we look at impermanence, that's a little easier to understand or to accept. But we wade into troubled waters pretty quickly when we begin to look at teachings around this idea of no self. And quickly realize the topic of no self is quite confusing for us in these modern times. We use this word a lot, self. It's our personal identity. We talk about self-esteem, self-consciousness. We take selfies. We're self-sufficient. We're self-actualized. We have selfhood. We are self-employed. It goes on and on. We are very self-oriented. So if we think about exploring the self, we might take one of those ways of thinking about the self, and so then we personalize it. But we want to look at it in a more broader way. Some people think, oh, no self, that means I don't exist. But the Dalai Lama said, we all have a valid and proper sense of self or I. But then we additionally have a misconception of that I as inherent existing. So a lot of times we think that this thing, this self thing, continues on, that we are solid type thing. Under the sway of this delusion, we view the self as existing under its own power, established by way of its own nature, able to set itself up. However, this is the Dalai Lama, if there were such a separate self, self-established and existing in its own right, it should become clearer and clearer under the light of competent analysis as to whether it exists as either mind or body, or a collection of mind and body, or different from mind and body. In fact, the closer you look, the more it's not found. This turns out to be the case for everything, for all phenomena. The fact that you cannot find them means that these phenomena do not exist under their own power. They're not self-established. I think conceptually we understand that, but to actually experience it and live that way is really difficult. And then to add some confusion to this idea of self, the Buddha himself discouraged his disciples from speculating about self. For example, he advised them not to ponder certain questions such as, am I or am I not? Because that would lead to six wrong ways of viewing things. One is, I have a self, I have no self, by means of self I perceive self, by means of self I perceive not self, by means of not self I perceive self, and the self of mine that knows is everlasting and will stay as it is forever. So if you're now thoroughly baffled, here the Buddha is not explaining whether you do or don't have a self. He is saying that such intellectual speculation is not the way to gain understanding. And notice that when we say, I have no self, that sentence assumes that a self doesn't have a self. So the nature of no self is not something that we can grasp intellectually or explain with words. However, without some understanding of this concept or appreciation of it, you'll have a difficult time understanding most everything else about Buddhism. So we'll look at what this is. This called anatta. It's a teaching that there is no permanent, eternal, unchanging, or autonomous self inhabiting our bodies or living our lives. And at the time of the Buddha, this is in contrast with the Vedic teaching that taught that there is within us an Atman, or an unchanging eternal soul or identity. But we see it come up in all kinds of teaching. One of the critical importance is in the teaching of the Second Noble Truth, which tells us that because we believe we are permanent and unchanging, we fall into clinging, craving, jealousy, and hate. and all other poisons that cause unhappiness. A little background on teachings of this from what the Buddha taught. According to the teaching of the Buddha, the idea of self is an imaginary false belief that no corresponding reality, which has no corresponding reality, and it produces harmful thoughts of me and mine, selfish desire, craving, attachment, hatred, ill will, conceit, pride, egoism, and other defilements, impurities, and problems. So we can think of the self-centered self. This is Tenisaro Bhikkhu says, in fact, the one place where the Buddha was asked point blank whether or not there was a self, he refused to answer. When later asked why, he said that to hold either that there is a self or there is no self is to fall into extreme forms of wrong view that make the path of Buddhism practice impossible. So does this view lead to have or not have a self, lead to identification with a self? And then we could easily fall into identification with nihilism. It's better to put the question aside and focus on other teachings, in particular the Four Noble Truths. In Mahayana Buddhism, we often talk about, teach a variation of anatta, no self, as emptiness. All things are empty of self-easeness, selfness. Dogen, we're familiar with Dogen and his famous quote, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 dharmas. So maybe you've had experience today of being enlightened by the 10,000 dharmas. Maybe just a moment of time when you forgot the self and you were just enchanted by the 10,000 dharmas surrounding you, whether during work, during meditation. We've all had those little glimpses of time when the self is not right in front of us, when the self has dropped away. The other day I was waiting in line in the store, and I was doing some of this practice, and I checked most of my breath, and I scanned my body, and I detected this uneasy feeling in my stomach. And as I became present, that uneasiness was born from some future thoughts of some potential problems. And as I concentrated on my breath and became present, it disappeared. It's an interesting practice to do as you go places before you come into like the temple or your work. Where am I? Where's my body? Checking in with the body, checking in with your feeling tone. What's my state of mind right now? Strengthen your attentiveness to notice arising and passing of these different feelings and states of mind. And if there's any aspect of experience that seems as permanent or stable, it makes it impossible to move along to awakening and wisdom. The teachings are clear throughout all the text. To explore these ideas of body and feelings, mind states, and our relationship with objects. But it's It's striking how powerfully we're all conditioned to really divide the world into likes and dislikes. We chant the relative and absolute. No, it's not that one. It's the other one. The one that Jomon in Affirming Faith in Mind. The great way is not difficult for those who do not pick and choose. There it is again. It's every place. So if we look at this idea of feelings a little bit more, why is it so important? Why does the Buddha single out feelings as one of the four foundations of mindfulness? So he said there's four really important satipatthanas, or areas to concentrate and be mindful of. Why is this one so important? It's important because it conditions our various reactions in the mind and in our actions in the world. When we're not mindful, pleasant feelings habitually condition desire and clinging. Unpleasant feelings condition dislikes and aversion. And neutral feelings condition delusion, that is, not really knowing what's going on. Muddiness, not caring, not knowing. Yet when we are mindful, these very same feelings become the vehicle of our freedom. The Buddha elaborated on this when he talked about two kinds of people: the unobstructed worldlings, or people, and the instructed noble disciple. So we'll kind of fall in the instructed noble disciple tonight, today. So when the uninstructed person is contacted by a painful feeling, he or she feels aversion to it, feels sorrow and grief, and may become distraught. It's like the Buddha used this example of two darts. So we have two darts in our lives, and we can think about it that way. The first, insult, disappointment, or obstacle. So it happens to us, so we're disappointed something didn't happen. Maybe someone said something that was unkind to us. There's an obstacle in our lives. But instead of just seeing that as it is, we add one more dart to this. We add an emotional content. This could be blaming ourselves. This could be blaming somebody else. And it erupts into much more than the original action. I was thinking, how does this really apply? So you can all probably think of one time when someone said something that wasn't very nice, or someone disappointed you, or say you were planning to have lunch with somebody and they didn't show up. Instead of just letting that go there, you built a whole story around that. What happened? It became much bigger than it ever was intended to be. Well, that's two darts, but there's really more to it. There's one more. And the suffering doesn't just stop there. The Buddha goes on to say, being contacted by painful feeling, one seeks delight in sensual pleasures. For what reason? Because the uninstructed person does not know of any escape from painful feeling other than sensual pleasure. Interesting. So, I was thinking, because we're doing darts, I think, okay, so you're in the bar playing darts with somebody. So we don't use darts much. And say, as you went to go pick up the darts at the board, they threw one at you and hit you. And then that would hurt. And then they left. And so maybe you don't know. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe it was on purpose. And then you made a big story about it. And so you have two difficulties. You're painfully hurt, and then you're exaggerating and making this emotional story into it. And then in order to soothe yourself, you're there at the bar, so you go have a few drinks, because that's how you've learned to deal with it. And I can say, that's how I did things. I never hit anybody or got hit by a dart, but when you're uninstructed in this day and age, this world that we live in, this is how we're taught. If we are injured or hurt or feel bad, then we reach towards those things that give us pleasure. And the things that give us pleasure could be food and movies and sex and drinking and smoking dope and all kinds of distractions. So this teaching is about understanding what you're doing and being aware of what you're doing. It doesn't say that all sensual pleasures are bad, but when we reach for them without knowing what we're doing, that's when we get into trouble. I was thinking about how this worked in my life before I came to Buddhism, and it would usually the dart was around work. So work would cause issues. I'm sure everybody's had work issues. And then you would come home and then you would complain and add to it and build it bigger and bigger instead of looking at what it really was. And then you would reach for whatever kind of sensual pleasure that you would help soothe this. And for me, I know that after a while I thought, there's got to be something better than this. There's got to be a different way of living. And I think that's one of the reasons that kind of moved me towards Buddhism or finding some kind of a spiritual practice. So because of our habitual tendencies, when we are not mindful of the original feeling tones, we can just go through our day being reactive, 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 in a fog, not knowing what we're doing, not being clear, not being diligent. We might wonder, what's the problem with avoiding unpleasant feelings through the enjoyment of sense pleasures? And as I said, it's not so much, the Buddha didn't say not to enjoy sensual pleasures. But what he said was, pay attention to what you're doing. Pay attention to how you're reacting. Don't add on to what's really happening. And the way that we can really get to that state is through our meditation practice. Because in order to do that, we have to calm our minds, settle ourselves, not be so reactive, and actually see what is happening. The Buddha summed up this wisdom of non-reactivity in two lines. We work so that desirable things do not provoke one's mind, and towards the undesirable, one has no aversion. So in closing, I was thinking, why do we practice? We practice for ourselves and we practice for others. It makes a difference. Somehow sitting still for hours releases, without effort, knots of our lives that keep us bound up. Bound up within ourselves, to ourselves, unable to move and feel or act in natural, genuine ways. As those knots loosen, our death grip on ourselves loosens, and we're able to see with new eyes hear with new ears, touch with new awareness. We realize that we're not separate from all the rest of the universe. We are the universe. We're the sun and the moon and the woolly bear caterpillar. Untangling knots is the practice. And what are those knots? We could say they're karmic knots of the past, karmic knots of our present. They may be conscious knots, or closely held knots, or unconscious, below the surface, knots that we're not really aware of. But when we sit and calm our minds and allow things to bubble up, we're untangling knots. These are knots that more or less continually loop ceaselessly around, so our energy becomes stagnant and lost and unclear. Untangling the knots is our work at hand. So as we untangle these knots, and we bravely look at what comes up, not pushing it away, not trying to make a certain kind of mind state happen. We go through the day and we merge with others and we flow. And there's a different quality of our lives. Here's the 7 points of mind training that I'll end with by Atisha. He's an Indian adept. This is to inspire us to keep walking on the path, this ancient road. Consider all phenomena to be dreams. Be grateful to everyone. Don't be swayed by outer circumstances. Don't brood over the faults of others. Explore the nature of the unborn awareness. And at all times, simply rely on a joyful mind. And don't expect a standing ovation.